It is the Last Minute Blues podcast. Donnie Fandango joined in studio by Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN and Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic. Gentlemen, all I have to say right now is it is so wonderful to see both of your faces in the same room. This is great.
Yeah, I know. I miss you guys. I was in Toronto for a couple days, and I saw the text messages flying back and forth. You guys were getting together for the pod, and I'm sitting there thinking, gosh, I win it. No, not really.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you didn't. That's just like when I did miss you guys when I was out. Like, I was nice to be gone.
And let's pull this apart just a little bit there, Alex, because I don't believe when you would initially ask, hey, are we podcasting tomorrow, I don't believe that JR responded with words.
No, he didn't.
I think it was just pictures from Robert Thomas's parents' house.
He one-upped himself with the name drops. He didn't respond with a name drop. He took a picture of Robert Thomas's house and sent it to us. And not the outside of it like a creeper, the inside of it. Like, oh, yeah, I'm in Robert Thomas's house.
Well, I got to tell you guys, so, you know, I planned that, a month or so ago and reached out to Robert Thomas's mom and dad, Scott and Deb, and said, hey, listen, Blues are coming to Toronto. I'd love to come stop by, see where Robert grew up, write a story about how he became who he is. And I'm telling you, in 20 years of making those types of phone calls and asking parents for some help, I've never had the hospitality that you get from the Thomases. It was amazing. Come on up. We'll pick you up at the train station. You're going to get to the Aurora stop. My truck will be there. It's a black truck. You know, it's unbelievable. And then so he sent me a text message talking about Scott Thomas, and he said, here's the four dinner options for tomorrow night when you come.
Oh, come on.
Chicken parm, veal marsala, marry me chicken, and the list goes on. And I go, how about all of them?
The great chairs, like, can you make all four and package three of them up?
So guys, I stop at the Aurora train stop. There's the black truck, picks me up, and we go to his house. And he goes, hey, there's actually a sign in town that says, you know, home of Robert Thomas. I go, go. I want to take a picture for the story.
But first, where's my veal marsala?
So we do a little 5-minute drive by the sign and take the picture. And, you know, just a small town, Canada. He's there at St. Andrew's Academy, the school. And, you know, he and Connor McDavid, some other guys, skate there in the off season. And we go back to the house. I got to tell you guys this story. So you go back and you hear so much about the rink that he had in the backyard. Obviously, all the Canadians, they flood the backyard. They have the rink. Well, Robert Thomas is where everybody, the whole neighborhood, went there to play hockey. So now that the kids are gone, they took the rink down, but he's turned it into like this curling lane. So legit 50 feet, 10 foot wide, and it's got the spray painted circle at the end, and they've got a tiki bar, and they go out there and they curl. And he goes, there, step on the ice, step on the ice. Well, listen, I've done all the self-deprecating jokes in the world. You guys have heard them, right? So anyway, my fat ass, all like 292 pounds of me on a good day, I step on this curling iron ice, and all of a sudden I hear it go,
oh. So Scott's like, get off.
So it did not break, but we got off and just went inside, and they got this island in the kitchen, and we just sat there for 3 hours and talked about Robert. And last thing, his mom is famous for her cookies. She makes chocolate chip cookies. When he won the Stanley Cup, they had the thing filled with her chocolate chip cookies. And they're really good friends with the Tkachuks, Keith and Chantel. And so she goes downstairs and gets a cookie from the freezer, brings it up, sets it on the island, it thaws out in whatever, 20 minutes, and I eat this cookie, and I take a picture of me eating the cookie with Deb, and we send it to Keith Tkachuk. The text message, all caps from Big Walt, lay off the cookies, JR.
Dude, that's amazing. Awesome. That is so awesome. What do you get from his folks that kind of tell you a little bit about the guy himself? Obviously, you know, man, I feel like a lot of times we are reflections in one way, shape, or form of our folks. We take some of those traits. Sometimes we don't. But what'd you see, man?
Yeah, no, so it's a three-hour, you know, sit in the kitchen. The recorder, it's like the recorder's not even there, right? You know that. And you put it in the, you know, they're talking. And they just tell stories about his upbringing and things that they recall. I do remember one where they said, okay, listen, you're going to this nice school down the street, St. Andrews. You have the opportunity to go to college and become whatever you want to be. But, you know, if you want to go play junior hockey somewhere and leave the house at age 15, you know, that could be a path too. It's all up to you. So go upstairs and make a list of pros and cons. Robert Thomas legit went upstairs to his room, piece of paper, they said, did a pros on the left, cons on the right, thought it out, wrote it out, came downstairs, and made a case to his parents why he wanted to go to junior hockey
really?
and go to London. and leave at age 15. And they said, Robert, is this really what you want to do? And his dad, Scott, said he looked right at him in the eyes and said, Dad, I can do this. I want to do this. And, you know, the rest is history. He goes to London. He wins a Memorial Cup. He goes, wins a World Junior Championship with Team Canada. And then he's on the Blues the next year.
It is amazing to me. And I understand that it is the way that it is. So I'm not, like, questioning it. But I cannot imagine having a 15-year-old son and saying, hey, go ahead, go somewhere else. Go live with someone else. I mean, the trust tree that has to happen between those hockey families, man, that's got to be another level, because I'm just not letting you stay at some rant.
Especially for the world today, to where, and like, maybe Canada is just a different entity compared to what we are in the U.S., but like, to be able to send them with a family that, I mean, I don't know how the Billet family works, that you don't know anything about. Now, maybe you can talk to them beforehand or you meet with them, but like, just thinking of sending your child to live with somebody, you don't know what the rules of their house are. You don't know how they handle bringing up, because it's not like at 15 years old you're a grown up. I was an idiot at 15 years old, like, still an idiot, but like, that's just wild to think about.
Well, we're thinking opposite, because I would send my kid to live with you guys any day of the week.
Well, that's very nice.
Who wants him?
You'll regret it.
Yeah, but you're right. So the Billet family, I do remember the mom's name. The Billet mom was Angela, because when I'm talking to Robert Thomas's mom, Deb, I said, so did you talk to the family like a couple times a week? And I think Scott spit out his coffee a couple times a week, a couple times a day.
I was gonna say.
Deb said, yeah, no, I called her a couple times a day. What's he doing? How's he doing?
Yeah.
Can he call me? You know, so it's a pretty tight relationship. And, you know, here we are years later, and the Billet family, they come to the NHL games, see Robert. There's a deep appreciation.
Do they go to school when they're at Billet's families, like in juniors, or is it just strictly hockey?
Yeah, so I don't know his specific situation, but generally, yeah, they'll go do whatever is the arrangement in that town with that team. If the kids are going to school, or, you know, whatever, they're getting homeschooled or what have you. But there is some sort of education there.
Do you think, and this was something that that Jeff brought up a bunch back in the day when, you know, we would talk about, you know, Jamie leaving his parents and going. But, like, is there something inherently that these guys learn that when they are younger, by having to go to a host family, that they carry with them into the league? Because it just seems like in the NHL, man, it just seems like really, more often than not, some tremendous, maybe not tremendous, but good people that you're dealing with. It just seems like hockey players seem to be like nice, pretty normal people by and large.
Yeah.
And do you think that has something to do with, like, being forced at 15 to be, I mean, you're pretty much being an adult, even though you're not.
I think it can go both ways. In a lot of cases, like Robert Thomas's, it goes well. We talked about that, he and his parents and I, about how it matured him and it turned him into an adult at a younger age. Because not only are you going upstairs, I mean, what 15-year-old is going up and making pros and cons about a life-altering decision that? But then beyond that, yeah, the decisions that you have to make living away from your parents and the decisions that you have to make, you know, we're going to talk in the article when it is published eventually about, you know, you're 16, 17 years old and all your friends are eating at McDonald's, and you know, because the trainer on the team is telling you, hey buddy, we got to do this, and you know, Matthew and Brady came up to Aurora, where Robert's family lives, because they wanted to train with Gary Roberts, and that's who Robert Thomas was training with. So they lived two doors down from Robert Thomas for I think it was a year. And same thing, Matthew, when everybody talks about the relationship between Matthew Tkachuk and Robert Thomas, you know, it's tight because all that time they've spent together. And Matthew, you know, they told me that he's saying, okay, this is what you need to eat if you want to be dedicated, this is what you have to do. And so I think what you're saying there really matters, because you know, these kids are forced to make those decisions. But it can't go the other way. Jake Wallman, I remember him, you guys remember him before he went to Detroit. His nickname, Repo, and that's because he thought his agent was going to take care of the car payments, and the agent did not take care of the car payments. So, thus the nickname.
Oh my
Repo
God!
After having that vehicle,
well, welcome to be learning to be an adult pretty quick.
I mean,
right?
Those learning experiences are tough. Yeah. Hockey player or no? Wow, that's fascinating.
That's
so,
wild.
Do we know? I mean, do you have like a ballpark when we'll see the Robert Thomas story, dude?
Yeah, you know, you want to turn it around as quickly as possible, right? The only thing is, I still have a few more people to talk to, and you know, in journalism, right now is the trade deadline kind of time period in terms of what we're focusing on with the trade deadline coming up on March 8th. So the Robert Thomas piece might be one that comes out after the trade deadline just because much focus.
It's right wild now. How the world of sports work, because the trade deadline is a certain date and you could be 2 months out, and that is the circle of the topic of discussion with that sport. Like,
yeah.
It is January 5th, not right now, but like January 5th. I'm way off. January 5th, and people are like, let's start talking trade deadline. Like, baseball season is about to start off. People are already talking about, well, maybe they'll make adjustments at the trade deadline.
Right.
It is wild how sports work.
It really is. And also, too, like, and I say this, too, even in the NBA, listen, my knowledge of the NBA is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
But, dude, last week was their trade deadline, and I was all over it.
Yep.
Like, it is just so fantastic. And then knowing that the NHL one is coming up and wondering what a bunch of these teams are going to do. Wondering, you know, like, I saw a rumor last night about Jake Allen going to Colorado.
Yeah.
All right? And listen, all respect to the Snake. All respect. But I don't believe that Jake the Snake going to Colorado helps them all that much more than where they stand now. I just feel as though this whole thing seems real wide open right now. So these little, these chess moves that are made between now and the deadline and after, I can't wait.
And Donnie, it's amazing to me. You would think that because of the roster each year, the interest in the trade deadline might be a little bit different from year to year. But it doesn't matter.
No.
If you've got the assets and it's a Ryan O'Reilly and a Tarasenko, it's off the charts, right? And so you think, okay, well, Scandella, Sundquist, Kapanen, and probably not. Nope. Every single day it's, okay, well, if they're not going to trade them, is it going to be Buchnevich? Is it going to be Binnington?
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen here? Kyrou, so on and so forth. So you're right. It doesn't matter, whatever it is. So right now at The Athletic, I'm sure everywhere else, we're really dialed in on the trade deadline.
All right. So this all said, all right, and this has been a room that we have tried to be very cognizant of where the Blues are in the process.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I have even tried to temper my own expectations as a fan.
And you did great at
which
it.
I did
Always
it for
great,
a,
right?
I did it for a week, and then I and
it
then
wasn't
I
wasn't a week,
and then I realized I was a force. So I think during this season I've went from no way we're going to make the playoffs. Even if we make the playoffs, we're going to be gone in a round. We're not going to make the play. Oh, hey, we might make the playoffs, and now here I stand. On February the 16th of 2024.
Wait, it's not January 5th?
No, I don't think so. Dude, I think that this team would be a pain in the ass for somebody in the first round. A huge pain. And like what we were talking about before we started recording, you got a goaltender that can steal games and can steal a series. Why would we try to trade anything? Why? I think we make some noise, boys.
I'm on the same page as Donnie, and I don't know how I got here because
maybe that might not be a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. Honestly, I should think about my life where I'm at right now. But so we were talking about this on postgame last night, and Joey was the one that brought it up. I'm not the one that brought it up, but Joey and I were talking, and he's like, you're at the point now where if you're a front office and you're this team, you just won, what is it, 8 of your last 10 games, and you beat some very tough opponents. Like from December 14th up until now, we were all calling it a gauntlet, and you found ways to win these hockey games. You're getting bounces going your way. You're getting contributions from players you didn't expect it from, Jake Neighbors, Robert Thomas. But the way Joey said it is where I come at on it. You've got goaltending, and you've got something that I would say – 5, maybe 4 of the playoff teams in the Western Conference aren't sure if they have. Like, if you go down the list, Dallas has got Jake Ottinger, but if he gets hurt, they're in trouble. Colorado needs a goaltender. Winnipeg's got their goaltender, but let's be honest, Connor Hellebuyck always gets a little bit tired for how much they use him by the playoffs. But then you go to the Pacific, Edmonton, you just saw, like Stuart Skinner, you put 6 goals up on him. You also have Vegas, who, if Aiden Hill gets injured, that's a problem. And then you've got the Vancouver Canucks, who Thatcher Demko you've beaten. Like, you've got the better goaltender than I would say 3 to 4 of those teams, and he has found ways to rob hockey games. I'm not saying you start trading Jimmy Snuggerud and Dalibor Dvorsky. Like, don't be stupid with it. But rather than sitting and waiting, I think it might be time, if you're the front office, to say, like, what else are we going to wait? Like, you don't get these types of goaltenders very often that can steal you series. If you look at this roster and say, yeah, you know, we're weak in 2 areas. We probably want to strengthen our defense, and we need secondary scoring. Why wouldn't you look at the trade deadline and say, let's see what we could get, rather than say, well, we don't want to do anything, or, yeah, you know what, I think we're just fooling ourselves, let's sell pieces off. You got an opportunity to steal at least one round of the playoff, and what's the ultimate goal here, JR? The ultimate goal is progress for a retool, and how do you make progress? You get to the playoffs and you try and steal a series.
Yeah, I'm all for what you're talking about, progress. You know, people ask all the time, is it, you know, does it make sense to get to the playoffs? You know, if that means you can't get a better draft pick. And I always say, yeah, that playoff experience. I mean, the Jake Neighbors, those guys, like, go through a series. When you eventually get to that point where you can be a contender, all those one series years, you know, add up and they give right. you a little bit. So you're not going in there wide-eyed that year that you're ready to contend. So here's the way I look at it in terms of Blues making the playoffs and such. Big picture. Are they a great team? No. Are they a team that I think scares people? I don't think so, except for the goaltending. You know, do they have the depth and the grit to go on a Stanley Cup run? I don't think so. But can they make the playoffs? Yes, they can. And what I like about this recent stretch, and you talk about the 8 out of 10, you know, you have that game against Columbus, and granted, the break came off it, but you're able to shake it off and then go play well against mm-hmm. Buffalo, Montreal. And then you have that dud in Toronto, and you come back and you beat a really good Edmonton team. And the reason I'm setting it up the way I am is this. You know, you're not talking about a team that poor execution for 1, 2, 3, 4 games, and then finally they have a good one. You have a situation where what the hell happened in Columbus? I have no idea, but they were able to park it. And they can tell you, hey, we're a better team than that. We know it. We're going to get it back. And then Toronto, hey, there's games throughout the 82-game year that you're just not going to have your legs, and that was one of those games. Now, if they come out last night and you see the same mm-hmm. lack of energy, but what I see here is a team that whatever problems they had were isolated and they were able to get back on track and play hockey, and you would think that they'd be able to do that, you know, the rest of the way here. So the way I see it is, hey, if you're Doug and they continue to play like they are right now, leading into the deadline, you probably stand pat, you might add a piece, like you said, secondary scoring, whatever, and then roll the dice in the playoffs with the goaltending that you have.
Part of me wants to, and maybe this comp is completely off because I was like 18 at the time, but that first year that they made the playoffs post-lockout, what was that, 08-09 with Andy Murray and they had the Chris Mason run? This team reminds me a little of that team, mostly because, like, you have to get your feet wet in terms of playoff experience. And I know they got Shen and Parayko and Torrey Krug, but to those guys that you just mentioned, the Jake Neighbors, I think it benefits a player like Jordan Kyrou to get another taste of the playoffs. I think it benefits you to have a Matt Kessel get the taste of the playoffs. Like, this feels a little like that year where they got in off of a second half run and you were thinking, like, oh, hey, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup. But could they go out there and make some noise because they're one of the hottest teams in the NHL?
Yeah, and Alex, what's the difference? You and I talked about this last year. What's the difference if you get the 17th pick instead of the 13th pick?
Absolutely
so
nothing.
So you're four slots down, but you played, even if you get swept, you played four playoff games.
The only thing that matters is a top 10 pick. Like, you want, if you're in that position, you want a top 10 pick. And if you're not getting it, all of those other picks, you rely on your scouting department to find a gem. And guess what? The scouting department that the Blues have
is finding gems.
Dvorsky was great. But guys, a lot of prospects are talking more about Otto Stenberg and Theo Lindstein for what they were. And they were late 20s. Robert Thomas was a late draft pick. Jake Neighbors was a late draft pick. Like, I'm not worried. As long as you're not drafting in the second round and don't pick in the first round, at this point you don't really care as much unless you're picking in the top 10.
Right on. Well, I mean, that makes sense. Okay, so I even feel like last night's game was like sort of a bit of like a microcosm of what we have seen lately. The first period is not great. It's not great. But then they came out second period with their friggin' asses on fire, and they absolutely took it to Edmonton for that entire period. Now, again, the third had its ups and downs. You know, it's not as though that you see this sort of like consistent thing every night, but they are able to respond when they get down, and that's something that they absolutely did not do at the beginning of the season. When they got down, they were dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had, you had those great saves by Bennington in the first period. You had the almost the goal as the time expired, mm-hmm. and it just seemed like the second period, I was waiting for them to come out like they were mad, and boy, they sure the hell did and brought it to them. And that's what just got me thinking, Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I just feel like we have the ability to be a real big pain in the ass.
Those saves that Binnington made are why Joey and I kind of got to that point in postgame, because like when your goalie makes those saves, you remember that Colorado Avalanche series 2 years ago where, I mean, Binnington was robbing all of those players, and it got to the point where they were in their own head. Like, they were looking at the banner every time they took a shot. Like, Zach Hyman did that twice on one power play in the first period, and that team was probably like, man, how are we going to get past this guy? And after they did get that power play goal and then they scored the one, but it felt like an Edmonton team, like, we're not going to be able to solve this guy. And then they had nothing. Like, Connor McDavid had two shot attempts in the final two periods of play. Like, that's now, there were like seven penalties that Edmonton took that kept him off the ice a lot, yeah. But that's their dumb fault. But when he was all on the ice, two shot attempts. So the Binnington saves, I just feel like it makes teams second-guess themselves, and you're seeing that depth of scoring that Donnie talked about. Like, that second period was all Jake Neighbors.
Oh, dude.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I believe that my love is starting to go towards an almost unhealthy level.
I thought the shirt was going to come off and twirl around at Enterprise last night when Neighbors did that.
Dude, when he scored, I started yelling, "My guy, that's my guy," and my daughter is just cracking up. And then when he got the assist on the next one, I was like, "That's my guy again." Like, I love every, I mean, it's everything. And then also, I did what you guys told me to do. So I watched the post-game interview that the Blues posted. And dude, you guys are so right. He gives the best and most thoughtful responses to his questions. Like, in-depth things about the game that you're like, oh, dude, this is not just a... this is not just an athlete answer to get out of the press to go back.
Right.
This is a guy that's really, like, giving you info. I freaking love him. Yeah. I love him.
Yeah, and we talked about you. I'm glad you said that, because we talked about that a couple weeks ago, and I was saying, listen to the responses that he gives. And the reason I say that, even at last night, I watched that also. And, you know, it's like a guy or a student or a professor where they know the information. So when they speak to it, you can tell they know the information,
yep.
Right? They're not just off the cuff coming up with whatever they can think of. You know, he knows what to say in those situations. And then also, you know, the breakdown of the play and how, I mean, you look at some of these plays that he's made in the past couple of weeks, that the bank pass off the boards,
yeah.
Some of these things are advanced. And then he can explain his thinking as to what he's doing on these plays. I just think the intelligence is through the roof.
Dude, and he's 21.
I know.
Where is this guy going to be at 25? And then the even better part of it is younger Blues being exposed to what he does every day at the rink, practice, game, whatever. That has me super excited to know that they'll have that guy in the room.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that he was the guy. Sorry, Alex.
No, you're fine.
That he was the guy who's like watching the veterans, and now the young guys should be watching him. And
well,
like,
and the veterans are kind of watching him too. Like, I don't know if this to be true. This just might be a tinfoil theory, but like, I think the way Jake Neighbors plays is leaking off on Jordan Kyrou. Jordan Kyrou is scoring goals in front of the crease. Like, his power play goals have all been standing on the doorstep, and that's like Jake Neighbors' his area. Like, I feel like players are playing playing like Jake Nabors because they're seeing the success. Steve Ott said it last night with Joe and Curbs, and he said, "What Jake Nabors has ability that other players at that age, the coaching staff says they call skittish. And what he means by that is like when you have that play that led to the goal, it was the Torrey Krug goal. He said normal young players in that position, they panic and they just got to get it to the front of the net. And he said Jake Nabors curled that puck in, looked behind him and saw Torrey Krug coming down the slot and got it to him. And he said, that's, you don't teach that. He said, that's just stuff players have. It's just a calm comfort when it comes to their ability on the ice.
And then a guy like Jake, I'll use him for an example, they never take credit. So when you say, Jake, tell us about that play where you set up Torrey Krug. Well, that was all him. He was calling for it. He was yelling. So I just tried to find a place to send it to him to get the puck.
Or
find a place. Yeah. Like he feathered it through.
And he even said something about like my line mates.
Oh, yeah. When they ask if you're going to be a 20-goal scorer, and he's like, oh, it's not me. That's everybody that I play with.
Stop it.
He's a captain. he is a captain.
Well, what's so great, too, is there were definitely a couple of times last night where, like, I noticed Jordan Kyrou on his horse hustling back to the defensive end. And I know that that's not something that we are going to see 100% of the time, okay? I get it. But... it seems as though that the drive has kicked in for Jordan Kyrou to some degree from what we were seeing earlier in the season. And I think that Drew Bannister probably has a whole hell of a lot to do with it because, I mean, he has seemed like, I don't want to say a different player since Berube left, but it definitely seems like he's kind of come into his own a little bit more under Drew Bannister.
Yeah. So let me give you guys two stat lines because we talked about this last night. Grant Francis, our outstanding producer on Blues with me, he likes to play a game called look at their numbers from last year to this year. Tell me which Jordan Kyrou you would like on your team.
This year.
Yeah, 53. Yeah. Come on, Jerry. You can't cheat like
that,
man.
We gotta play the game,
this is
man.
Like Candyland. You can't stack the damn cards. 53 games played, 25 goals, 54 points, and a minus 24. That was last year's Jordan Kyrou. 53 games, 18 goals, 42 points, a minus 4. I mean, he is almost 20 goals differential in terms of being on the ice against. And, yeah, he's got 7 goals less than what he was last year and in 12 points less. But I think I would much rather, as much as I want, and I fall victim to this because, like, you see Jordan Kyrou and you get frustrated because you're thinking $8 million, you need to be a 35-40 goal scorer. That's what you're getting paid for. But we complained so much last season about how he's a liability, you can't play him on the ice, and now we're talking about a guy who, through 53 games, is a minus 4. And that's a minus 4 of a guy who's playing on the top line with Robert Thomas and Pavel Buchnevich. I hope that he's in the same category that Robert Thomas was last year, to where it was like you looked at it and you said, oh, you want more. Where's that next level coming from? But in one season, Jordan Kyrou completely changed the definition of him being not a defensive player. And I'm not saying he's a Selke Trophy candidate, but he's not a liability. I mean, he's in games for you. He's creating opportunities in offense, but he's also not looking like a minus 36.
Yeah, I think two things. One is that the frustration level between Jordan Kyrou and Craig Berube probably reached a level that he was going to be a good player in the league, but I don't know that that relationship could have continued, and Jordan Kyrou continue to soar, for one. And number two, you talk about since Bannister came in, not that Craig Berube didn't bench Kyrou, because he did, and took some shifts away from him, so on and so forth. But when you have a situation where, okay, let's flip Kapanen with him, let's pull Kyrou down a line or two. Oh, we're going to put Jake Nabors on top line, which Craig Berube did too. And now all of a sudden two things happen. Now all of a sudden you give Nabors more, and he takes it, so he grows. You can see him develop more. And by the way, Kyrou's going, wait a minute, now Nabors is in my spot, and he's scoring goals. You know, I need to do and get on the train here and do what these guys are doing. So, you know, I think that Bannister's done a great job, and I think Craig Berube was trying to. It just wasn't connecting.
The message was not getting there. This is probably maybe not a reason, but it seems as though shortly after Drew Bannister got here, the Blues' fourth line kind of settled in to Torpchenko, Walker, Sonny, and that seemed to be a very nice table setter a lot of nights. And I almost feel like a lot of the good plays and the way that they're playing kind of started there. is that kind of a silly thing to say? I mean, it just seems as though that line, again, just is really good at it, if nothing else, saying, hello, boys, we're here, and the next 60 minutes ain't going to be easy for you.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, when you look at a team and you say, okay, they're having success because of Nathan Walker, Sundquist, Torpchin, you know, it's hard to say that a team's playing well because of that. But I think a couple things. You talk to Blues players, and I talked to one recently who said, you know, Torrey Krug, he said, we evolved into a rush team, and I don't think that's winning, sustaining hockey.
Yeah.
In terms of being a rush team, and we just kind of evolved into that. So then when you can reestablish that forecheck and that gritty, hardworking, and you see the success that that line has, those other lines, yeah, they might have more skill, they might, you know, be rush-oriented, but they're still going to say, okay, that's working, you know, that's what we need to do, that's what this team needs to be. And then when you look at Bannister, and he's putting those guys out at the start of games, the start of periods, they put him out at the start of the Montreal game, what does Toropchenko do? He looks like...
puts a highlight reel goal up on, yeah, on the
real
board.
Goal. And then here's my question, Donnie, you know, and things are decided behind the scenes that I'm not privy to all the information, but... Nathan Walker, all he did for the past 3 years in St. Louis was have success when he came here, and you noticed him every night out, but for whatever reason, he wasn't on that opening night roster. I think that having him in St. Louis instead of Springfield at the start of the year, mm-hmm. you know, he could have really helped that fourth line. Finally, they made the call, brought him up. I think he's been great ever since. You see him put Revo on his butt the other night.
Yeah, and, yeah.
He's a big part of what that fourth line's doing.
I mean, you said it absolutely, nailed it. Every time that guy is on the ice, you know that he's out there. With that said, are we going to continue to see Sammy Blais scratched? I mean, because to me, one of the things I love so much about Sammy, and obviously he was in a bit of a different role last year after the trades, he was getting more ice and that sort of thing. But, like, there have been times where I'm like, oh, Sammy Blais played tonight? Mm-hmm. I feel like I never had those kinds of games last year. Am I imagining that? What happened?
Yeah, well, and I think some of that is, too, like you said, Donnie, that was circumstantial. Like, he was playing in your top six last year. He was getting opportunities, and he was scoring goals, where now you're not seeing those same opportunities. He's hitting. That's what Sammy's been doing. I think you're just going to see a rotating, right? You're going to see a rotation of Sammy Blais and Nikita Alexandrov on that fourth line, because it's very obvious that they're looking for somebody to play on that third line with Kevin Hayes. They put Torpchenko up there last night to start. Nathan Walker got some reps up there, and they kind of went back and forth. I think Sonny was playing with them by the end of the game. They need their fourth line, because you do need that identity line, and it has been Sonny and Torpchenko and Walker, but you also can't hurt that third line because you need the depth of scoring with Hayes and Saad. So I think it's going to be rotating until somebody can take hold of that. Frankly, if I'm being frank with it, I think it's also going to be until they either make a move for another forward or Jimmy Snuggerud comes in to play, and then you put that fourth line put together. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen much from Alexandrov when he has played. Sammy Blais at least brings that physical presence, but Alexandrov is a former second-round draft pick, so I'm sure the Blues are probably thinking, what does he have to offer?
Well, and maybe this ties back to what you were saying earlier, Alex, is if this team is in a playoff spot and Doug Armstrong is inclined to add something, maybe it is that third-line right-side guy to come in and kind of...
Or the second line, and you put Kapanen down on the third line.
Yeah, exactly. You could do that. So kind of a middle six guy, as you were saying, because I really do think that if you're going to play game one of the playoffs, that Alexandrov can't be in the lineup right now.
Right.
And I think you need Torpchenko or a Sundquist on that fourth line. You don't want to move them up. So I think you probably need that middle six forward and slot them down, because that fourth line is going to be – I mean, I'm not saying you're going to win a round or two,
right,
but if you're going to be competitive –
it's critical for them.
That fourth line needs to be intact.
All right, guys. So Justin Falk out, Scott Perunovic out. Perunovic, I believe, has been skating.
Mm-hmm.
Falk, I do not believe, has been at
all. Bannister continues to say he's day-to-day also. So he hasn't been skating, but he's day-to-day.
He actually, and this is NHL coaches, not just Bannister, but he actually said yesterday he's not close, but he's day-to-day.
That makes no sense. All right.
I hate injuries in hockey.
Okay, so guys, what happens to the D when those two guys are back and healthy? And here's a big thing. So Perunovic probably going to be back first.
Mm-hmm. I think Perunovic goes right in the Callie Rosen spot. Like,
right.
We all love Callie Rosen.
Right.
Callie Rosen, I think, is a great seventh defenseman. But Perunovic goes there because then he's playing a power play. He was playing well with Marco Scandella before he got injured. I think he just slots right back in, and they just keep going with where they're at.
Okay, so there's that. So then what happens when Justin Falk comes back then?
That one will hand over to the insider.
I saw this coming a mile.
Donnie, thanks for listening to me earlier in our show prep.
Well, because Justin Falk is not close, but day-to-day, I don't know.
Don't you weasel out of this one.
I don't know if he's going to play in April or tomorrow.
Right.
But I think it's
good coach speak.
Hey, one thing I've learned over the years is you sit here and say, okay, this guy's 2-3 weeks away, whatever. Well, what's going to happen when he comes back? Well, two other guys are going to be injured when he comes back. But you always got to do the disclaimer that if everybody's healthy, then what happens? And I just think it's, you know, a situation right now where, Perunovic probably takes Rosen's spot, right? But Falk comes in, and it's like, is he ready? Because I know this is a separate injury from the last one, but remember when he came back last time?
Played like two games.
Yeah,
he was very hesitant on the ice.
Wasn't ready. So does he start out third pair? I think for now you keep Krug and Kessel together, and I think when Falk comes back, you probably still keep those two together. But it'll be interesting. You know, who comes out if you keep Kessel in? Does Scandella come out? You know, I think if Perunovic is healthy and playing well, you need him to quarterback one of those power plays, so he's a tough guy to pull out. So if and when Falk is healthy, he'll get back in there, but it'll be interesting to see.
This is
out.
My only demand. Not demand. That sounded aggressive. I can't make demands. I'm a freaking podcaster.
Just so you know, you didn't really sound aggressive
did
at
I?
All.
Okay,
you,
cool.
You just said,
this
I have
is
a demand.
My demand.
All right. You know what? I didn't have that high pitch of a voice. Don't break Krug and Kessel up. Just don't break Krug and Kessel up. I understand that Falk and Krug have played well together in the past. They haven't when they played together this season. You cannot deny what Matthew Kessel, and I know Joe had mentioned this on one of the pregames with me, like scouts are starting to talk about Matthew Kessel and how he's playing around the NHL. I don't know what he's going to become, but what I do know is Torrey Krug is a significantly different defenseman in the 20-plus games that he has played with Matthew Kessel than what we've seen from him in the last year and a half. You can't break up Krug and Kessel. Your top four, in my opinion, is set in place. Really, what we're discussing is what happens with the third pair.
I'll be darned. Well, but also, too, I mean, I want to see the points from Krug since he's been playing with Kessel.
Oh, I looked at this. I think prior to his 5-assist game, and then he got, 2 points last night?
Yep.
1 point, if I'm not mistaken?
At least one.
Prior to these past two games, he had 9 total points, and I think it was 15 games that he had played with Matthew Kessel. I acted like I had it. I looked at this the other night. He was at about 9 points. One all were assists because the goal hadn't been scored. But yeah, I mean, he had put nine assists together in about 15 games, and I think he was only a -4. And the minus that he was when he played in that short sample size with Justin Falk when he came back. Like, he and Matthew Kessel have been together, and it's been less than a -5 when they were on the ice together.
So we can't break that up.
No.
It
and
doesn't.
The 5 assists that he just had, and then, of course, the 2 points last night. So, I mean, now we're talking about like 16 points in that time frame.
And again, it just seems like he is a visible, speaking of Torrey Krug, a visible difference maker every night. He's salty. Oh, he's so salty. and I absolutely love that. Scandella throwing down last night.
That was great.
Getting into a fight. It was, it's very nice because it just seems as though, and we talked about this last week and the week prior, but it just definitely seems like there has been some cohesion over the course of the last month or so with this team. They just look different, and they look like they're playing for each other, and it's noticeable and awesome.
Yeah, it seems like there's a pretty good vibe going right now. And, you know, I've said this before earlier in the season, but I think once that calendar turns to January 1 and you see that you're in contention, I think you look around the room, okay, this is what we've got. This is what we need. Okay, this is how many points we're down or up in the standings. Guys, we can do this. It just seems always to be that sense of pulling together when you have the right chemistry in the locker room. We all know that when that's not there, I mean, it's hard to do. And especially for the Blues the past, you know, however many years, when the expectations are so high and you're not going to come close to meeting them like we saw, you know, last year, and why Doug had to go into this retool, that's when things start to fracture in the locker room. This is the exact opposite of that situation. This is the team who Doug Armstrong said, well, we hope to finish third. Well, here you are in a wild card spot, and you might be distance from third place and can't get that, but the playoffs are attainable. And you want to, as a player, if you're Braden Schenn, Torrey Krug, give Doug Armstrong a reason not to move two or three of these unrestricted guys or a big guy. So I think that's where you see kind of just that cohesion that you're talking about, that grit. And what you said earlier, you know, when it is a 1-2 goal game in the third period, staying in those games instead of, okay, we're too far out of the play, we're going to fall back.
Yeah.
Not, so.
Yeah, that's confidence. I mean, that's something that the team didn't have at all last season. And, I mean, you can't deny in, what, 26 games, this team every single time they've been down and out of a game, you're thinking, well, they could come back in this one.
Yeah.
Like, there's maybe been a handful of games that you look at and say, they're not coming back. But overall, since Drew Bannister's taken over, if they're down by 1-2, the doubt creeps in of like, man, they might be able to come back into this hockey game, where at the first chunk of the season, we were thinking every time they score first, you're done.
Right,
unless,
right.
Unless Columbus gets an insurmountable 1-0 lead on you.
That's very true.
I mean, that was daunting.
I got to tell you, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
that was potentially one of the worst hockey games that I've ever watched in my entire life.
Grant texted me because he filled in on pre and post. That was when I was in Disney. And he goes, you did this on purpose, didn't you? You picked this game to leave for. And I said, well, you needed to get some practice somehow, right?
Donnie, Columbus yes. game would you go to, or Bon Jovi concert?
Oh, Columbus game.
Or Rascal Flatts concert.
Whoa. Rascal Flatts or Bon Jovi. Okay, listen. Here's what I'm going to say. I would go. Wait, am I going with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, then I'd probably go to Rascal Flatts. That's because good. Then at least I know you'd be having
you
a good
the
time.
You get the excitement.
And, like, and it would be you. Like an experience. Like, watching the people there, I think, would entertain me while being at Bon Jovi. And no.
Both concerts, so you have to wear a cowboy hat.
Wait, but
Tommy used to work.
See, that's not even cool. I told you, though, I don't know who I told, but so I just got done reading Little Steven's book, Steven Van Zandt, who's in the E Street Band, was Syl on The Sopranos, Lillehammer, just amazing. And he has almost a chapter on Jersey guys, all right? And he has 3 or 4 pages on John Bon Jovi.
Really?
And he seems awesome. Like, he seems like an awesome freaking guy. And the same for Richie Sambora. And I know that Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora don't get along anymore or whatever, but like, they just seem like regular kind of guys, and I hate reading
Don is
it.
Like, I hate this stupid book because I don't like Bon Jovi.
Every time that Living on a Prayer comes on the radio, my son will turn up the radio and then look at me and go, what? What? Because he knows that I don't like it. Like, he knows. So, Rascal Flatts, not Bon Jovi, and there's no way I'm wearing a cowboy hat to anything. I mean, ever in my life, that's not going on this head ever. Ever. I mean, ever.
JR looks good in a cowboy hat.
Photoshop opportunity.
You know
week.
What? Jake Neighbors wants me to hang out with him. I'll wear a cowboy
Jake
hat.
Jake Neighbors loves some country music.
That's so sad. That's kind of what I wondered, if maybe that's part of one of Kairos' problems, is that he spends all the time with terrible and like pools with digits. Like, man, like,
I wish people could see that.
Yeah, we'll have a.
Yeah,
we're
gonna have YouTube soon, so people can see Donnie.
See my dance moves.
He was just DJ Khaled there for a minute.
I follow him on Instagram, and I'm like, dude, maybe you'd play better if you didn't listen to such crap. But, you know, man, that's just me. Okay, well, I think I've run this thing into the ground. For my guys in studio here, Alex Ferrario and Jamie Rutherford and Jamie Rivers, who's out and about somewheres, and our good friend Jeff Burton, who is watching over us and laughing while he's looking at porn. Thank you very much for listening to the Last Minute Blues podcast. As always, let's go Blues.